Okay, can folks hear me?
Yes.
All right. I'd like to say good afternoon to everybody, and welcome to our call on Aging Network Emergency Planning. My name is Chris Lucas. I'll be acting as our moderator today, but I'd like to take a moment to thank you for being part of this and to let you know that this teleconference is now being recorded. It will be available on AOA's website in the coming days. I'd ask you to please put your phone on mute if you don't have it on there already. There will be a Q&A at the end of this, the end of the hour, so please identify yourself when you're speaking. The purpose of today's teleconference is to learn from the multiple experiences and perspectives of our presenters who've dealt with many different emergency situations. While looking at the lessons we've learned collectively, I also want to place a lot of focus on proactivity and preparedness within our network. Today's presenters represent a talented cross-section of our aging community. Irma Tetzloff is the regional liaison for the Administration on Aging and acts as its disaster coordinator. Fran Carlin Rogers works on the state level through the Alzheimer's Disease Initiative Advisory Committee. Kathy Sewell is the Director of Client Services at the Alzheimer's Association and oversees its nationally known contact center. And John Skirvin of Norfolk, Virginia is the Executive Director of Senior Services of Southeastern Virginia and a veteran of problem solving at the local level during emergency situations. I'd like to thank you all for being part of our panel today. I would also like to announce that we are very fortunate to have Josefina Carbonell, the Assistant Secretary for Aging, with us. In this capacity, she has been an integral part of the current relief efforts and also many other emergency situations throughout a very distinguished career. I would like to invite Josefina now to make some welcoming remarks.
Thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm delighted to open up this very important teleconference today on a very, very timely topic. Today, I think you'll hear from people with firsthand experience about how the Aging Services Network responds in emergency situations. We hope that this teleconference will give you the information you need to better prepare and respond to an emergency situation in your community. Millions of seniors in this country count on the Aging Services Network and our providers in their daily lives. Historically, in emergency situations, the Aging Network has worked across federal, state, and local levels to help support and assist the people that we serve. For your information, within 72 hours after Hurricane Katrina first struck, AOA had staff on the ground assessing the damage and supporting the state units on aging in their efforts to serve their seniors. Another way that AOA is helping with relief funds is that to date, AOA has released approximately $2 million in disaster relief funds to Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and then most recently, Texas, for immediate reestablishment of their infrastructure as well as resources to support their full recovery. We have initiated action to reestablish the service capacity of both state and local agencies so they may be able to reestablish their service delivery network. Earlier this month, I visited the Gulf region, and I want to assure you that the Aging Network is going strong as we speak right now. AOA are still assessing on the ground. They're on the ground right now, and they're assessing and assisting and supporting not only the state aging office, ensuring that we assist them in the mission request for FEMA, but that we also assist them in the infrastructure recreation of staffing and supplies and materials to get it to the right people at the right time for service provision to their older residents, including those that are in special needs shelters. We are working with federal agencies and other organizations to make sure that the needs of affected seniors are known and that our seniors are treated with the kind of respect and dignity they so deserve. As you may know, in my former position as a service provider in Miami-Dade County, I was on the front line when Hurricane Andrew devastated our area. So I was the only provider open during those times and assume responsibility for all aging program services in the Miami-Dade County area for the first 12 days after the hurricane struck the South Florida area. We certainly learned many lessons from that experience and many more that we learned afterwards. And you'll hear from those experts later on, especially that you can never be overprepared in coping with widespread emergencies and disaster events. Of course, disasters tend to have a greater impact on the elderly and persons with disabilities. For example, in Maryland, following Hurricane Isabel, the population over 60 years of age constitutes less than 12% of this population, but accounted for over 40% of the applications for FEMA for assistance. When disaster strikes, all sorts of complexities disrupt what may already be a fragile balancing act of keeping life together each day. A disaster may limit independence and diminish quality of life very quickly. We know there are quite a few challenges, and particularly associated with protecting the health and well-being of persons with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. That's why the work of the essential community providers in Louisiana and Texas, Mississippi and Alabama that prioritize special needs population before, after, and during the storm was critical in the work that is being done and has been done for our most fragile patients in the impacted areas. As we proceed and look forward towards the future, I urge all of you to be proactive, as we are here at AOA, in thinking about how to best plan in advance for how we can work even more effectively together in assisting older people and their families in emergency situations. I don't know if Mike Weston is on the line. Are you on the line, Mike? Well, if not, he will be joining us. He's trying to get to a landline so the communications will be better. But I wanted to have Mike Weston, who is AOA's expert consultant on disaster response and emergency preparation, talk to you during this conversation, because he's on the ground and he can give you a little bit of the experience on the ground and how the presence of the aging network has been so critical in the response to these situations.
As we move forward, I'm on line, Josefina.
Oh, Mike, you're there? In addition, today's panelists will speak from their own experiences. They will offer helpful information about what you can do to prepare for and respond to an emergency situation in your area. I know that they will assure you that AOA and the good work of the Aging Network strengthens before, during, and after emergencies, and we are there throughout the entire process. I want to thank our speakers today for sharing their knowledge and experience, and I also want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time to attend today's teleconference and for all the work that you do every day to improve the lives of our nation's seniors. Mike, before we turn, and Chris, a little bit of a liberty that I'm taking, that I thought it would be good to hear firsthand from our disaster response teams on the ground. Mike, if you can just give a synopsis of the experiences that you are experiencing with the state units on aging on the ground.
You know, this is Steve McConnell. I asked Chris if I could say a word on behalf of and on the call of Americans of the country, but especially in the Gulf States, and especially with Alzheimer's. We appreciate so much your caring, your compassion, and your leadership in helping deal with this disaster. I know that you've been down there on the front line and providing leadership directly, mobilizing the aging network, and we're just all very grateful for that.
Thank you, Steve. It's our responsibility, and I think the most important people we need to recognize are the folks that we have on the ground, the professionals, the caregivers, the area agency directors, the caseworkers, the Meals on Wheels deliverers, the volunteers that we have. Despite tremendous circumstances, their own lives torn apart, their homes lost, and their families, I remember vividly one of the deputy emergency response coordinators in Mississippi telling me that he had left his mom, who was 92 years of age, home. to go over to the office for an hour to try to collect a case management list of the clients to ensure that someone would contact those clients after the impact. So we know that the real heroes here are the folks that are on the ground day in and day out, and they are the ones that make a difference. That's why it's so important that we prepare for any kind of emergencies, natural or man-made, for the future, and that we take a little bit of time, step back, and really get our acts together and improve our capacity to run even more efficiently should any other disaster impact. Thank you, Steve, for your kind words.
Thank you. I believe Mike was going to say a few words.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's a privilege to join you all. Talking to you from the Office of the State of Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services here in Austin, Texas, where they have been working now, I think the count is some 55 consecutive days in relation to initially serving as a host state to Katrina, and then being a direct impact of Rita more recently. And again, I can only echo what Josefina is saying about just how the Aging Network sends and delivers every time in these types of circumstances. And I think the real driving motivation is that as you go down a street, a neighborhood, where perhaps on one side of the street there's a young family with children, and on the other side is an elderly couple, and each side of the street looks the same, but there's a distinct difference that young family, by and large, has their life ahead of them and an opportunity to build memories, and that older couple or that elderly individual, their memories are strewn across the yard and down the street, and their opportunity to put their life and those pieces back together is all the more difficult. And I think that's a real motivation to the Aging Network. They just don't quit. Some of the issues that we're seeing, and we've seen it starting in Alabama, in Mississippi, Louisiana, and now in Texas, is that typically there's you prepare for a disaster, you weather the event, and then you recover from it. But in catastrophic events, because of the scale that you're looking at, you have to deal with that there will be disasters before the disaster, specifically those circumstances of losing those 23 elders outside of Dallas on the bus, the raging impact of these storms coming in, and then when you have moved out, in the case of Texas, some 2.7 million people out of harm's way, just in addition to the focus on 15 severely impacted counties here, then you have the logistics of moving the better part of 2.7 million people back to where they came from. So that results in the need to focus on improving extended sheltering operations for special populations, acknowledging that no matter how bad is, people don't want to leave their immediate and familiar surroundings. When they do have to leave based upon compelling circumstances, you really have to have good, sensible guidelines in place to accommodate the reception of those special populations. And in so doing, it is absolutely critical that just as soon as possible that you build in a sense of community for where they're arriving, because that is how they manage their day-to-day circumstances from where they live. So that's some quick and initial thoughts, and I thank you for the opportunity to share those.
No, thank you for updating us on what it's like to be that close to it. Building upon your comments, Mike, and the assistant secretaries, I'd like to invite Irma to speak a little bit about, Irma, if you could please elaborate on Administration on Aging's role in helping states and communities recover from disasters and emergency situations.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak as well. And I'm a little bit humbled by Josefina and also by Mike, because they've been out there at first hand. And I've sort of done the behind-the-scenes work, but gotten very involved over the years with what's going on. One of the things that we stress throughout the time is for people to be very careful about their communications. And I think you've seen this played over and over in the media here in the last few days with all the reports. We're always very concerned about the special needs people. And so the more accurately we can do reporting about what's going on, who needs the help, and that kind of thing, the more likely we are to get the kind of support that we really need to try to get this response team to work with us. We consider ourselves to be partners with the first responders, and the big thing is we don't want to get in their way. We want to be supportive of their efforts, and then when they come upon the special needs older persons, and we want to be able to be helpful to them because oftentimes they have to move on quickly to the next person. And oftentimes they don't have the time that it takes to work the elderly through their issues that they need to deal with. And that's where the Aging Network comes in. We want to be very sure that we have information about where our special needs populations are, what kinds of records do we have on them, and we try to put that together in some kind of composite so we can tell people, here's where we are, here's where the people are, and here's where the help is needed. And if we have case management reports, if the area agencies have good reports in terms of their staff, where the staff are, let me backtrack just a minute because I want to just piggyback on some of the other things that we've said. I've been talking here about communication primarily. But when a disaster strikes, what I was told by people who worked in the New York situation is the first thing people worry about is, are they okay themselves? The second thing they worry about is, are the people standing around or next to them okay? And then the third thing that people worry about is their family. Is their family okay? And do they want to be in touch? So that's kind of the pecking order of how things go. And when people have that kind of information settled in their mind, then they can proceed to go about their work with the seniors that they're responsible for. And typically when we have an older person with special needs, and I consider Alzheimer's people as being part of that population, we consider that we have two people that we're taking care of because it's best to have a caregiver with the person with special needs in order for those people to be able to, for people to be able to communicate with the person that has special needs as well as take care of the caregiver who oftentimes is frail themselves. So our biggest goal is to try to get people into safety, to make sure they have food, water, ice, etc., and that we figure out a way to partner with those people who are on the front line in doing the first response. And I think I'll save the rest of my comments for other people to go ahead and then maybe later answer some questions that people may have.
Okay. I need to apologize first. I did want to give a little bit of background as to who you are and your qualifications. Irma Tetzloff has been with the administration on the administration and management of federal programs for the elderly for over 30 years. And she's currently the regional office liaison and manages 9 regional offices and is AOA's disaster assistance coordinator. I just wanted to give folks a perspective. But Irma, if I may just ask you one quick follow-up. You know, you talked about the homebound elders and the elders with special needs in the community. You know, what are the critical steps and the systems that AOA has in place to identify them and to assist them?
Well, I think we depend on large part on the Aging Network for this because what we are hoping that everybody has is a case assessment on the people that have special needs and that they know where they are, how to communicate with them if that's possible, and then also what kinds of immediate assistance they will need. And the case managers play a critical role here, or the information referral people, or the service providers. And oftentimes, it's the service providers, the nutrition folks, the home delivered meals people, the people who provide in-home services that are the most intimately acquainted with the types of needs people have. We also want to make sure that people have medications. And it's critically important that if they left home without their medicines, that we figure out a way what it is they have to have for their daily existence. Well, while I'm answering your question, I'm kind of rambling, and I don't mean to.
Okay. Thank you. Our next panelist, we now move from the federal level to the state level to talk about some of the same topics, but from a different perspective. We have Fran Carlin Rogers. And Fran is the chair of the Florida Alzheimer's Disease Initiative Advisory Committee. Fran has more than 25 years' experience in community services and healthcare, and has worked with many community organizations throughout the state of Florida. Fran, could you tell us, just to give us a little history here, what the Alzheimer's Disease Initiative is? It's a state-level entity, but it's very unique. Can you give us a brief overview of how it's organized and how it applies to emergency situations?
I'd be happy to, Chris, and thank you. I'm very pleased to be with everyone this afternoon. The Alzheimer's Disease Initiative Advisory Committee was created by the legislature. We have programmatic areas that are funded through general revenue, and they are four. We have memory disorder clinics. We have 15 state-sponsored clinics throughout the state of Florida that do clinical services as well as education and applied research in Alzheimer's. A second program component is respite care for Alzheimer's, and we have at least one center in each of our 67 counties. We have a model daycare program that looks at best practices for Alzheimer's folks. And then lastly, we have a brain bank research program. So these four program areas are administered by our Department of Elder Affairs. In addition to those, the legislature created the advisory committee, which consists of 10 members who have been appointed by the governor to specifically make recommendations to our state agency on aging on all matters relating to Alzheimer's. So we are separate from the department in an advisory capacity.
Thank you. So how is it tied in specifically to the Florida preparedness plan? How's the ADI tied in?
Well, our direct link is through our state agency on aging, the Department of Elder Affairs. We make recommendations to the department relating to policy and program changes, and then essentially have a bully pulpit if we need it with issues of concern. We certainly have spent a lot of time in the last year talking about the impact that the four hurricanes that Florida had had on our Alzheimer's family. We also have a connection through our area agencies in that some of the programs I mentioned a bit ago are funded through the area agencies. A couple of them go directly from the Department of Elder Affairs. But that gives us a very good base across the state for communications in emergency situations. We know the folks at the area agency and work closely with them in a variety of ways. So when there are issues, we're able to pick up the phone and talk to someone that we know and have a working relationship with. Let me give you an example that happened here in Orlando during our first storm, Hurricane Charlie, last year. I received a phone call from a case manager who was working in one of our special needs shelters, and we'll talk a little bit more about those in a bit. But she was working with a family, an Alzheimer's husband and wife. They had lost everything in the Brevard County area. And this was probably about day four or five into post-storm. The issue that prompted her to give me a call was that there's a requirement in our special needs shelters that you come with a caregiver. But in fact, that caregiver is on duty 24/7. And this caseworker was very concerned because she was recognizing in the family that she was working with that there was no opportunity for the caregiver to even have 5 minutes off or to be able to get away at all, even if it was to a chair in a corner to close her eyes for a few minutes, etc. I recognized that this was not just a problem in this particular shelter, but that it was a statewide problem. So we had the ability I made a phone call to my counterpart at the Department of Elder Affairs, and he was able to be in touch with the Department of Health here, which actually runs the shelters. And between the Department of Health and the Red Cross, we're able to make some accommodations, not only for this family, but also some way to be able to sell the caregivers who are also in this crazy situation, so that they can keep going and keep supporting our Alzheimer's folks.
You mentioned these the medical shelters.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that just a bit and explain how they function in times of emergency versus, you know, non-emergency?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Chris. They certainly are shelters of last resort. They do require pre-registration, and there are a variety of ways that our organizations try to identify folks in the community who are going to need some special assistance in a disaster situation. Anyone who is going through an assessment process for any of the publicly funded programs, one of the questions that is asked is whether an individual would need special assistance of some sort. Also, we have social marketing campaigns through utility bills and articles in the paper and that sort of thing. So people are aware that they need to identify themselves ahead of time and go through a registration process. But as I mentioned earlier, one of the protocols is that an individual who needs one of these specialty shelters come to the shelter with someone to be of assistance to them. And that's one of our concerns with Alzheimer's, folks who may be living in the community. We have lots and lots of seniors, as the Assistant Secretary knows here in Florida, we have lots of folks who do not have family and are living independently in the community. It's my understanding that it is possible for an individual to be admitted to one of the special needs shelters. If you don't have accompaniment, then it's certainly something that that is somewhat rare. So, like was mentioned earlier, we're looking not only at the needs of the Alzheimer's victim, but also their caregiver and their family.
Okay. Very quickly, I would like to remind people that if you can put your phone on mute setting, that would be appreciated. You'd be surprised at how sensitive some of these phones are, picking up the shuffling of papers and the like. So, you know, lastly, friend, I'd like to know, you know, what are the key issues that the Alzheimer's Disease Initiative thinks that caregivers and people with Alzheimer's disease need to be aware of in times of emergency?
We are in very significant ways trying to have everyone understand the critical importance of pre-planning, whether it is in amassing supplies or making the necessary registration for special needs shelter, or in fact making an individual or family plan. We're spending a lot of activity trying to get that word out to individuals and get tools in their hands so that they have checklists, they know where to call, et cetera. So we believe that pre-planning is absolutely essential, whether it's with individuals and families who are dealing with someone with Alzheimer's or whether it's folks at agency level. We're also, of course, very concerned about caregiver needs. They are traumatized in these situations, certainly, as well, and then have the added burden of the responsibility of a loved one. So we're very concerned about helping to shore them up in any way that we can, and to make sure that we have agency staff who are in regular contact with them, whether it's in a shelter or in temporary housing in the community.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I would like to let everyone know just a brief announcement. You know, due to the other ring-ins that have occurred throughout the teleconference, we're looking at about 28 to 30 states now that are represented on this teleconference. Not to make our future speakers nervous, but it's very impressive, and we're happy that you all could be a part of this. So next we're going to move on to Kathy Sewell. And Kathy is the Director of Client Services for the Alzheimer's Association. In this capacity, she oversees the National Contact Center, which is a nationwide 24-hour hotline that responds to the needs of those with Alzheimer's disease and their caregivers and connects them with local support. So, Kathy, thank you for being with us. And, you know, I'd like to start off by saying, you know, as the Director of the Contact Center, can you tell us what kind of disaster-related calls the Contact Center is receiving and how you're responding to?
Thanks, Chris. First, I'd like to say thank you to all of you for all the great efforts you're making in everything you're doing. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. One of the things we're doing is just offering our services, as you know, 24/7, and having the ability to have these calls responded to by not only our information and referral staff, but also by our care consultants who are, at a minimum, master's level clinicians. They are really being a support to those families out there who are finding themselves as instant caregivers and also finding themselves in this disastrous situation that are just beyond frustration. So the contact center has been a conduit of information for evacuees. It has been a conduit of information for other areas on from the aging network. And we are...
Kathy?
Are you there?
Yes, we are. Please,
okay,
folks, if you can put your phone on mute, we'd appreciate it.
Put my phone on mute?
No, not you.
Oh, okay.
Everyone else but you, Kathy. Everyone else.
I'm like, wait. But anyway, we're attempting to answer the real issues of the caregivers and the persons with dementia. And not only that, we're trying to connect people. The biggest issue is the connection, where people who have been separated and disconnected from their family, caregivers from the persons that they care for, and trying to have them have the contact center be a place where they could be referred to and reconnected. We have a safe return program, which we're also attempting to have some visibility of out there into these shelters. We're trying to also do dementia training in the local area, so, and the affected areas. So the types of calls taking, we haven't gotten much from the affected areas like Louisiana, Mississippi, et cetera, but have gotten calls from the immediate areas that are being affected by this deluge of people coming into their areas, like Houston, for example. And also people who have picked up evacuees and brought them home. We had a call from a person who contacted our Florida chapter who was an instant caregiver who knew nothing about dementia but all of a sudden was caring for her loved one. And the family dynamics were such that there was a brother who was lost in the devastation in Louisiana. There also was another brother who had been deployed to Iraq. So the family dynamics were such where there was a lot of concerns and issues. The person who also was involved was another sibling from Virginia. And the person from Florida who was caring for their loved one said, I don't know what to do, where my mother will go, because I don't know if I can take care of her. Well, our local pastor, along with the contact center, was able to provide that person with the resources they needed to make a good decision and continued care counseling after that to ensure that the person was well cared for on a continuing basis, but a very, very stressful circumstance. The brother, by the way, was found in Louisiana, thankfully. But we are all working together to ensure that we have the right information. That's critical. And ensuring that people can be connected quickly. And also for these other agencies who don't know much about dementia, that we're there to provide dementia training and to give them a sense of what types of behaviors people will be seeing in a person with dementia as they're caring for them.
Thank you, Kathy. I think you raised an important point here about the instant caregiver that you mentioned, where, you know, even if you have a regional disaster, the way families have, you know, are spread out more these days, you can find family in almost every state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes back to our grantees a little bit. And so, you know, I'd like to ask you, how does the contact center, or how can the contact center support the grantees on this call? Are there any steps that the people on this call can, you know, in turn do take to support you?
Well, I think that if we get is the Safe Return Program, which is a program that the Alzheimer's Association has been involved with for many, many years, just enrolling people in that where they have an opportunity to be able to access our number, and we can access local authorities, the chapters, the family members, first responders, to be able to get that person home safely. It's so important to have that preventive type of resource for people around the country. So enrolling in the Safe Return Program is an active participation in something that in disasters like this would be very, very helpful. There's a number that people would be able to call. It comes right into the contact center. We are then able to locate and have a number of important items about that individual that we have stored in our database, including a photograph of the person that we can dispatch to the local authorities. We have all their medical background and the list of not only one family caregiver, but a list of others as well. So even if they do move and the caregiver is separated from them, if we can't get in contact with one caregiver, we go down a list of people that we know we can contact and who has interest in this person's well-being to get that person home safely. So that's one way. And then having a shared information database of local services is critical. Sharing with the AAAs and other area agencies on aging and the aging network, having all local services and information and to share that with everyone would be a critical thing for us. Throughout, for every state to provide that to us would be amazing, so that we could, if there should there be an opportunity where we need to use it, we can have that immediately at our fingertips, and our contact center staff would be able to share that information immediately. And that not only is shared with our own staff here at the national office, but throughout 300 points of service through the chapter network, because we're all linked together as one association.
Mm-hmm. You know, and in the idea of, or along the idea of planning and preparedness and improvement, what is the future role of the contact center during emergency situations?
Well, I think putting together a disaster plan is really critical, so that not only the association but the chapter network, there are 80 chapters and 300 points of service, as I said, that we're all ready to be deployed within the organization to help those who are in need immediately. And sharing those lists of referral information and what we know about the disease and dementia to others. We have someone from the contact center right now in Mississippi working with the local chapter in trying to find all of the collaborative agencies throughout that area and to use the contact center brochures, to use the safe return information, to make sure that everybody knows how to contact us, how to get in touch with us so we can provide the best service to them, especially the overwhelming feeling of desperation that people have during these times. We have social workers here 24/7 who are able to help people through this terrible time. So that's how we can deploy our services for the future, is to always continue to be there and also to find new ways to connect with our families throughout the country and using the opportunity we have like today to share resources, information is an opportunity we can't pass.
Well, we're glad you're taking the opportunity. I would like to now move on and speak with John Skirvin. John's the Executive Director of Senior Services of Southeastern Virginia and has over 33 years of experience in aging. Senior Services of Southeastern Virginia is one of the first area agencies on aging in America and today is the largest in Virginia, serving eight jurisdictions, reaching over 14,000 elderly and family caregivers annually. Senior Services focus its efforts on preparation and recovery from natural disasters. John is currently involved in a regional human service disaster planning initiative, and that could not be more timely. John, what I'd like to ask first is, you know, in your experience in emergency planning, it's obviously been tested by Hurricanes Isabel and Floyd. You know, what are the keys to responding and to planning effectively?
Chris, thanks for asking that question. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. But before I go further, ladies and gentlemen around the United States, please give Mr. Lucas a hand for organizing this. Hey, now, Chris, I hope everybody took their phone off mute so you could hear a national round of applause. You're doing a great job. And I'll pick up the receiver now. The experience in emergency planning our prayers and our thoughts are with all the people along the Gulf Coast. And although we've been, I think, reasonably successful in handling the aftermath of Category 1 storms, I'm telling you, there's no way that we would be prepared today for what, you know, our folks have seen on the Gulf Coast. And as a result, every one of our jurisdictions, our cities and counties, have sort of really energized their planning process. And the first thing that we're dealing with is defining the problem. When you look at the issue of, say, evacuation, you know, what comes to mind is, well, transportation is an issue. But transportation is much too broad a topic. You have to, you know, define the problem and analyze it. So that's, you know, the first piece. The other thing is not to plan in isolation. And that's been, you know, really, I think, one of the things that our organization has been a part of making happen is a real regional response. And if I can just read you a list of the folks that were together last Thursday, brought together in one room by our United Way, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, Household Finance, who has jobs for the folks who are relocated from Katrina, Chesapeake City Department of Social Services, Samaritan House, which is a homeless shelter, the United Way from various another city, Suffolk Department of Social Services, our local healthcare foundation through our hospital system, free emergency rooms, free clinics, for instance, the Red Cross, of course, who is really the lead agency in our area in disaster response from the human service side. For housing, our Virginia Beach Community Development Corporation, the Planning Council, which is a regional planning nonprofit that handles daycare. And I think we have to think about grandparents with grandchildren being affected as part of that caregiving matrix. Our local information and referral center, our crisis line. We talked about the distress that people are feeling, Kathy just did, and it's absolutely critical that not only the people who are victims of the hurricane, but the helpers have assistance. We're an at-will work state, but we have some very strong unions in our shipyards, and it's wonderful to see that they've stepped up and are also offering jobs. But then the issue is, how do you get from where you are, where you don't know where you are because you're in a new community, to this job? So transportation takes on a different meaning in that context. Our regional realtors, we identified as a real need to be brought into the mix, and they will be invited to participate with us. And that's and our legal aid society, not to forget that Louisiana is Napoleonic law, so a totally different legal system than what we have here in Virginia. And that is really something to think about when you think about the wills and estates and the various kind of, say, restraining orders. I mean, what if you are a victim of domestic abuse and you've got a restraining order? How do you, you know, how does that get enforced? So you need to bring your legal papers with you. Just to end sort of this thought process, one of the things that we found was with our assisted living facilities and nursing homes, as an example, they are all using the same transportation providers to evacuate on their emergency plan. We'll fix that.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about who you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of going to the other side of this and saying, can you list or describe the critical things that you address in the aftermath of a disaster at the local level?
Okay, yes, absolutely.
What should we be planning for?
Okay, it's interesting. The principles that we developed for our planning is to reduce confusion, to make sure that people who've been affected by disaster get everything to which they're entitled, And it's really interesting. You know, a market philosophy would be survival of the fittest, and let's restrict benefits. Whereas in a recovery, you're trying to help people restore themselves as fully and as holistically as you can. And if everybody's on that same page, it means that you're going to better integrate your benefits, and you're not going to step on each other's toes. And then also making sure that there's a consistent referral sequence. People, you know, no wrong door is correct, but there are some doors you should go through first. Or if you came through the other door, you should get to the front door, because that's where you start. And so if everybody understands the referral sequence, and in our case it's Red Cross, Human Services, which would be like your local DSS, then the Salvation Army, and then all of your other helping organizations. That way, by the time that person has their needs well defined, they're not going to waste their time and become even more frustrated in trying to get help. The communications is critical. I've heard that before in this thing. After Hurricane Floyd, which flooded one of our cities, Franklin, what happened was that all of the cell phone towers were blown down, and the telephone switching station was flooded out. And we were flummoxed. I mean, it was 2 weeks before we could really get ourselves back together. Now, that was back in 99. With Isabel, we were ready, much better prepared, because we'd made our mistakes. And so we had a communications plan for the organization as well as for each of us individually as human beings and as staff people. And so that our communications were greatly improved, and we were able to go into sort of a recovery mode much, much more efficiently. I will say that everything that the Red Cross says to you is true. Take care of yourself first. I really appreciated Irma's hierarchy of concern. Am I okay? Are you okay? Is my family okay? And then you can worry about other people. I'd really reiterate that, but start thinking about that a week ahead of the storm. And certainly with hurricanes, we're fortunate that we have extra time to plan. If it happens like 9/11 did, then you're almost got to flip yourself, look at it backwards, but go into the same mode. One of the things that I think is real important that we've learned is that you've got to define your market. No margin, no mission. Everybody in the United States understands that. In our case at Senior Services, we knew that the Red Cross and Salvation Army were going to have feeding stations for ambulatory folks, so we focused on homebound people. All of our staff had their client lists, and then when we were back up in operation about day 4.5, we turned our finance department into a call center and called like about 1,000 or 1,200 people in an afternoon, because we had supplied them all out with food ahead of time, shelf stables, but we needed to know who to resupply. And then we reorganized ourselves into teams to go to senior high-rises and other neighborhoods. And then it didn't matter what your real job was. Your real job turned out to be what was needed to do to pick up the pieces for the folks behind, in this case, a hurricane. And that leads me finally to again talk about communication, is that we had figured out how we were going to talk with each other before we left, before we shut down for the storm, so that the lines of authority were clear, people were comfortable that it would be weird, and that they would have to do something they didn't normally do. And that, because we really are, brothers and sisters in arms here, people at least were comforted by the knowledge that we were looking forward to seeing one another again.
I know there's actually more you and I can talk about, but I did promise that there'll be ample time for questions and answers, and perhaps we will get to some of the questions or discussion that you and I were going to have after this. But I really would like to open this up to our many callers from many states We have a very talented group of folks, and I want to make them available to you for as much time as we can. Please just, if you're not talking, keep your phone on mute, and please identify yourself, your name and where you're from, and I'll do my best to direct your question to the best panelists if they don't already speak up. So I invite the first person, if you have a question for any of our panelists, fire away.
Hi, this is Sharon Booker in Louisiana. I'm interested in any information you might have about giving prescriptions to seniors who have been displaced and have no insurance and are not on Medicaid.
This is John Skirvin. There's something called e-Medicaid for victims of Katrina. And I know in Virginia that is automatically qualifying you for that sort of relief. Also, all of the pharmacy houses have free medication programs, I would suggest that you go to something called seniornavigator.com, seniornavigator.com, that's, all one word, and the pharmacy connection. Through the Virginia Healthcare Foundation, they have software that has all of those applications in one place.
Well, we have the apps, but they take about 2 months to get the medicine started, and nothing will be delivered to the zip codes of those who were flooded. Also, the pharmacy free meds, some have already cut off. It's been a month now since Katrina hit. I believe Merck is the only one with actively saying they'll continue till October 15th. But I didn't know about the e-Medicaid, so I'll look into that now. Thank you very much.
Is there, thank you, John, Sharon. Is there any other questions as far as planning and preparedness?
This is New York State. We're just wondering about in times of a disaster like this, when you're trying to share information on clients or even prepare for disasters, how much leeway everybody has, especially health providers, in sharing what is often looked upon as confidential information under HIPAA?
That's a very good question. Are any of our panelists like to speak to that?
This is Irma. There was an arrangement made in the Gulf area for that there to be a waiver of certain requirements for emergency workers. Now, that's typically associated with medical information, and it's only for the medical workers, and people take great pains to try to still keep that information confidential. And there was a presidential edict that was issued related to that.
Thank you, Irma. Do we have any other questions for our panel? Well, I do have one question, actually, for John, which was that, he had talked about the teams they had formed internally. But, you had mentioned, you're bringing the realtors to the table. What are the other unique relationships that you need to create in order to respond and plan effectively?
That's a good question because, if you always remember, start where the client is. You look at the family and what do they need. For instance, certainly with what we found with Floyd, again, was there had been significant damage to our roads. And with the Virginia Department of Transportation, the VDOT workers turned out to be real allies as we were attempting to resupply our home-delivered meals boats. We also found that one of the real things, seniors are the last to come out in a disaster, and God forbid, think about somebody with Alzheimer's or the caregivers. What we really saw was a lot of fatigue. Even if a person was not injured physically, they were very frightened, kind of shell-shocked, and, normal sleep was just not a real thing. And particularly after a hurricane, it is just, pardon my language, but it is stinking hot, humid. All that tropical air remains for several days. So you're uncomfortable, and, medication, as we've indicated, is a real issue. The other thing that we're finding here is that with the employers in the area, you've got to get back to work. But part of what we've done with our Chamber of Commerce is, and again, okay, so we're the Area Agency on Aging. What's up with the Chamber? What's up with the Chamber is that you've got working families who are not caregivers necessarily of infirm folks, but they're, you know, real supports to their families. So for our participation in chamber activities, we're always, you know, reminding them, you know, about the fact that we're an aging society and that their workers are family members of aging people.
Thank you. I would like to, you know, we have time for one or two more questions.
This is Mike Weston, still on the line. I wanted to speak to some of those alliances that are important to build and acknowledge that you might not traditionally think of in a disaster.
Please do.
One great resource, and it was borne out in Maryland, again in Florida last year, across the four hurricanes, and it's a bit of a misnomer, and people don't tend to look at it, but the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, in fact, they are one of the greatest sources of housing and assistance across the nation, and they have two programs, the 502 and 504, that are not emergency-driven programs, but fit extremely well, and for a rural elder, and again, in the context of what we're seeing in Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama to some extent, and clearly the part of Texas hit, there's going to be a very good matchup between the victim and the potential for benefit, and it affords eligible applicants 62 and older in rural areas a $7,500 grant for assisting in getting their housing back to safe and sanitary conditions, and up to a $20,000 grant, $20,000 loan at 1%. And again, that's just something that under normal circumstances, people tend to think of either commodities, you know, of massive amounts of milk or cheese when you think of USDA, but they're a great resource for housing. And that's part of what I'm doing here is connecting the dots. Occasionally you have to create the dots, but more so it's connecting them. And on that note, I would strongly encourage the listening audience to become a part of a local organization known as Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster.
Yeah.
They can be a great resource in the ongoing recovery, even though landfall of an event like a hurricane occurs within hours, the misery goes on regrettably for years. And these organizations, not individually but together, do help make that victim whole again.
Well, thank you very much, Mike.
And
points are well taken. I would like to, you know, thank our very distinguished group of panelists, especially the Assistant Secretary, for taking the time today, and for, you know, I think the Assistant Secretary made the greatest point where, you know, we can never be over prepared. So these ideas that everyone's spoken to of communication internally and externally, planning ahead, the unique and common relationships, knowing our strengths and our limitations, and building a sense of community within each other. But this idea that we can't be overprepared is quite a strong one. John was very kind to me, but I really should state for the record that we have a very large and talented team behind these teleconferences, and while I get to be the pretty face, there's a lot of people who don't get enough credit for helping put these together. So I'd like to publicly thank the ADDGS team here at the Alzheimer's Association, but really the folks over at AOA do a tremendous job in providing resources for these. So, you know, the credit really goes there. As tradition, I'd like to offer Lori the last word here.
Before Lori has the last word, this is Kathy again. I'd like to ask that anyone who knows persons with dementia that are and their caregivers who really need help from the Alzheimer's Association's 24/7 line, please have them call us at 800-272-3900. And if we could have the state's list of resources that we could put on our information repository, which will go around the country to our chapters, it's contactcenter@al.org. we would really appreciate any emergency listings and numbers that you have so we can share the resources with all those that need it. Thank you,
Kathy. I'm sorry I didn't mention that before. It's a small step that can make a big change. So if you have that information, those local numbers, please feel free to get them to the contact center as soon as you can. Lori, you still there?
I'm still here. In closing, I just want to thank everybody for coming on the call, panelists, participants. I know I have a lot of notes and information in my head, and I hope this starts fueling some conversations in your communities that help you plan and prepare should you need to be ready to help the seniors in your areas. I know you do a lot every day, but taking some extra steps could mean a great deal of difference both for your well-being and theirs. So really appreciate everyone taking the time to be on this call. Thank you.
In conclusion, if you have new questions as this percolates in your brain over the coming weeks, months, year, please let us know, and we will try and either get in touch with our presenters or perhaps another resource to answer your questions. So that concludes our teleconference for today. Thank you to the tremendous amount of people who were a part of this, not only our presenters, but our listeners. We know your time is valuable, and we hope we provided you with information that you need. So have a great day.
Thank you.
And we can't wait to hear from you.
Thank you.